telepathy.
Well, good evening once again. Apologies for absence from Herman Tate, and a welcome to David Daniels of the First School. I can't remember when we ever had a talk about mathematics, the statistics discussion group, but there you go. But reading through your abstract as to what goes on at the purse, well, one would expect that there's some good statistics lurking in there somewhere, so...
I'd like to think so, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting to hear about it all. Thank you. Carry on.
Probably I'm going to have to take my coat off. My
name is David Daniels. I work just up the road, about a quarter mile away, for those of you who are not familiar with Cambridge. I've taught there for now 22 years. I enjoy my job. It's a busy job as head of department. What you're looking at now are one of our classrooms, new classrooms. We've got a purpose-built new block for mathematics and English. So we have 8 purpose math rooms. I have a project room. All rooms are equipped with a smart board, as you can see, with whiteboards. What I'm going to do tonight is try and explain what's going on at the purse, and I'll try and entertain you. I'd like to think I could be controversial, and I'll try to be, but you'll have to wait till the very end for that, so you'll have to stay away. Anyway, you're looking at the classrooms and our students. This is not my particular classroom. It's one I took these pictures because we put them in on our information for parents when they come to view the school in November and September. We have open evenings and open days. Yeah, I've been there for 22 years at the purse. In that time, A-levels and GCSEs have changed. We've had coursework, we've had non-coursework, and there's been phenomenal changes all the way through, and only in the last 5 or 6 years has been some stability in my life in terms of the changes nationally, because we've been able to remove ourselves from the changes that happen nationally in mathematics. So the upper school is about 940 students in total. We have about 80 plus staff. I don't even know how many staff are teaching in the school. There are 3 schools associated with the purse. This is outside the purse girls. So there's our pre-prep, our prep, which is on Trumpson Road, and the upper school, which is just down the road, Hills Road. Total student numbers are probably about 1,100 across all 3 schools. And as I say, about 940 at the upper school, where I teach. We've just gone through a period of expansion, and we're going to go through another period of expansion in another year or so's time because of the growth in the Cambridge area. So the plan is to take the upper school to around about 1,050. It's now completely co-ed. When I say that, it's completely co-ed. There are girls throughout the school, with the exception of year 11. That's from September this year. It will be completely co-ed. It's 5 form entry at year 7. Class sizes, people have already asked me how big are my classes. In year 7, they run about 22. Now, some of you are quite envious of those class sizes. And at 13 plus, we've taken another 2 classes. And so, probably
from year 8 onwards, the class sizes tend to be about 25, 26. And what we do is we set within mathematics so that I've got smaller classes at the lower end, so that top sets will have large numbers, 25, 26, and the lower sets will have around about 10, a dozen students, and they can get more personalised attention. Okay. So what I'd like to do is just talk about some of these issues here. I would also like to say some mathematics. You're not just going to sit there all night, mate. So this is the line of my talk tonight. Mathematics of the purse, how it's organised, the exam boards and syllabuses, our schemes of work and learning, using technology in the classroom, what we do, preparing pupils for Oxford and Cambridge entry in mathematics, recruitment of maths teachers. We've just recruited 2 new maths teachers because mathematics in the school is expanding phenomenally. Controversially, the analysis of results, you're about to see something that very few people have ever seen. And then a short word at the end about measuring mathematics. If I bore you, let me know. And if you want to put in and ask me some questions, just do so. Right. Okay. So, mathematics at the school, there are 13 members of staff, including myself. Everyone in my department will teach from year 7 through to 6th form. And I will also arrange for some members of staff to teach in this way of this preparation using step papers. Just close that down. I've got this. I must be struggling with my eyesight these days because what I need is that. Setting for me is a major issue every year. It's one of my biggest jobs and one of my most paid jobs. But what I do is, you'll find this on our website, I tell all the parents exactly the procedures we will adopt for our setting. Setting for many parents at school is quite crucial because we have an express stream taking the exam, IGCSE a year early. It used to be about half the year group, it's now about a third. About 50 students will take IGCSE at the end of year 10, so year 11. You'll see the results. So, on our website, I've posted this. It gives them details of how we go about organising our setting. I'm not going to bore you with all this. So in year 7, there is no setting. We're not entirely comfortable with that, but it works, and we still talk about that. And then in year 8, we have, this is for next year in fact, there will be 5 classes, and that's how we're organising the structure for next year. Currently there are 4 classes in year 8, and I teach one of them. And then following through, you can see in year 9, we have 2 extra classes coming in. These are parallel classes, so this class will be size about 12, this class will be 25, 26, and these classes here will be 25, these could be about 22, 23, and then...
That's say 2A and 2B together would be about 25.
No, that's 25 each.
25 each.
Yeah. The year group is 150 right now. So we're going from a year group in year 7 of them, of just over 100, 110, to 150 plus in year 9.
So the bulge is in 2 and 3, sets 2 and 3?
Yeah, effectively. Yeah. But the setting, I set a 13 plus paper, and an 11 plus paper, entrance papers, and I actually tell them how we're going to operate. During the setting, so our own students take that 13 plus paper and count towards their end of year position as well. So that's year 9, here's year 10, follows on a similar pattern.
crucial setting is made at the end of year 9, because in year 10, these guys here will want to take the exam year 11. These five classes here will wait further year to take out. There's pressure on us to increase the numbers. In other words, set classes taken year 11. We've resisted that this year.
Where does the pressure come from?
I think it's from parents, because we've got a larger increase, larger student numbers. But we've got a feel for what we're doing, and we think we're right.
Is it good for them to take it?
Sorry?
Is it good for them to take these exams a year earlier?
Well, there are mixed feelings. Some people have mixed feelings about it. I mean, the government's just said that they don't want people to take exams a year earlier. But for our students, the nature of our students in our school, when you'll see from the results, they'd be bored with unless there's a super challenge. And we've given them something in year 11, which we think is good for their mathematical education. But you could argue otherwise. So those two classes then go on to take... these two classes go on to take an extension exam called additional maths in year 11. In the sixth form, there is no setting whatsoever. The only setting that takes place in the sixth form is by timetable. That's a summary. All this goes to the parents, and I spell it out clearly, so that when they come back to me in June and say, can you reconsider? I on my spreadsheets and wherever I do the analysis, I say we've played it straight and fair. Doesn't mean I always win. Anyway, but in the sixth form we don't set. So in the sixth form, students will go on to do a variety of courses, from AS mathematics and A-level mathematics, to AS further mathematics, to further mathematics. I'll describe those courses briefly for later on. So the examinations then, just to run through what, by the way, that's available if you wanted to visit our website and find that information. I'll just bring up one other paper. So the examinations that students will take, in years 7 to 10 we have our own internal exams in the summer months, and then we do IGCSE, and I'll say something more about IGCSE in a few minutes time. Those who take it year early then go on to do additional maths in year 11. We do A-level mathematics, and it's a variety of courses there, it's a modular course, and we offer a lot of options to the students. So they can do half of that A-level, they can do a full A-level, they can do 1.5 A-levels in maths, they can do 2 A-levels in maths. Spend on what they want to do. And then for the super bright, if they're thinking of mathematics at Cambridge, then we also provide them with step lessons or preparation for Oxford. We also embark upon various mathematical competitions. I don't know many of you know about these. They've been introduced nationally, and most schools are now embarking upon these maths challenges. So that we embark upon is a junior maths challenge. We enter our year 7 for that. That's applicable for years 7 and 8. There's an intermediate maths challenge. It's available to all schools, which is 8. We enter our year 9 for that. And there's a senior maths challenge, which is open to year 11 and above, mainly for 6 months. And the senior maths challenge takes place in November. Those students who do well in the senior maths challenge then qualify for the first round of the Mathematical Olympiad, the British Mathematical Olympiad. So we usually get about 9 or 10 students who qualify for the first round. I think it's, I'm not sure about the numbers nationally. Is it 500 who qualify for this nationally, this paper? And then they whittle it down the second round, Mathematica, is usually expelled about 100 students nationally. And following the round two of the Olympiad, they narrow it down to about 20 students nationally, and they invite those students here to Cambridge, and then over a weekend they give them some practice and drills, and they whittle that down to about 7 students, I believe, and those 7 students will then take part in the International Maths Olympiad, wherever that's taking place that year, during July or August. We have one student this year who qualified for round two. That student is in year 9. Yeah. Very bright. But we've got students coming up like that. He might be super bright, he's very mathematically gifted. But we've got other students who, perhaps not quite as lead, but who are very, very, very bright. And I can see that in a few years' time, these guys will be challenging for the BMO round 1 and 2. And I won't be surprised if he doesn't do well in BMO 2 next year. He works very hard. Okay. Has anybody solved that first problem then? N being integer greater than 6, prove that for n minus 1 and n plus 1 are both prime, and n squared times n squared plus 6 is divisible by 720. This is round one, and the nature of this notion of round two is there's three, which is a 3-hour paper. The next round is 3.5 hours, and just 4 questions. So he didn't quite succeed to get through the next round, but it's very, very hard. Okay. Right. You almost laid that one up, so you started. But we do, there's 6 questions there, and we do prepare them for this. Now we have one member of staff who actually takes them to one side and gives them some help. Plus we've also got on our own network, we've organised it such that the students can access any past paper, any area they want. So they've got access to hundreds of these. Going back, the way in which I've organised it, can go back. 20 years.
So when they're looking at this kind of question, to what extent do they make a kind of team game of it between themselves?
They won't really. There's not a team. This is not a team event here.
I know, but when they're studying it, studying past papers.
Right.
I mean, they're not taking part in the event.
Yeah.
They're working on
well, a lot of that would be done on a one-to-one basis for this teacher.
Highly selected.
It wouldn't be done in the classroom. This is no time for this in the classroom.
Interesting that there's such an emphasis on geometry in those questions.
Yeah.
Given that some years ago there was a move to take geometry completely out of the school syllabus, I believe.
Yeah, well, a lot of the geometry there goes way beyond what was
expected.
So the only way you actually cope with those is to go back to the old traditional textbooks. You're never going to cope with the geometry, any of those questions that you've just seen if you just rely upon the textbooks that are supplied for the school mathematics now. Yeah. You'll never do that. Right, next thing I want to move on to is examples and solutions, and I'll try and be a little bit controversial here. Excuse me a little while. When I first arrived at the person back in 1990, there was no coursework to contain place, and the department's in a bit of a mess. And so I had to take on board and start coursework and get the department prepared for that. And at that time, we were doing 4 structured tasks set by the examination boards over the 2 years. It's a lot of work, but I quite valued those tasks and I found them interesting. And I think I'm still the way to introduce them to students. They enjoyed them because it was outside the standard syllabus. Then the exam boards realised that because these tasks were set and structured, they had an answer. they didn't like that because anyone could copy the answer as soon as the internet came and that was it. But they went first of all to unstructured problems, and there was then a lot of guidance given to teachers about how to go about marking this work, where there was no, there were open-ended, so students could take anywhere they want, more or less, and how you go about marking it when there was no fixed answer as such. There were kind of answers, and the teachers would direct, but that was the theory behind it. And that was then the case that they were reduced to two projects, one of which was a statistical project. And I enjoyed it. I mean, I did, but of course it was killed by the internet. And of course students would just type in fencing problem and it would come up with an answer. That was it. Now, you know, the whole coursework was done. And the government killed it off. Now, it was a shame in some ways, but it was the statistics project, I have to say, did it for me. I went on a training course. We had to go on these training courses to learn how to apply these criteria. So they were marking statistical projects according to these criteria. And I disseminated the information back to the department about how we had to go about doing this. I couldn't understand it. Nobody could understand it. So I remember one... must have been... Well, there are two things that happened. I think it was one March evening. We'd moderate the papers and take a sample of, we'd all go away and mark these, come back and see what marks you're coming back for these students before we go off and mark the whole lot. And I remember we were stuck there until 6 o'clock and we couldn't agree because we couldn't understand the mark guideline criteria. And then one particular teacher said to me, well, why don't we just add, we knew that nationally we were being harsh, so she just said to me, why don't we just add one mark to each lot and not worry about it? And I thought, well, it was one answer, but it wasn't the answer I was looking for. Yeah, so, but the other thing that really, really annoyed me, I had one, we have some very clever students at the first, and this guy, I produced this statistical project which was out of this world. You'd have given him a PhD on this, otherwise. He got 21 out of 24. I complained left, right. No, the criteria said this, and he hadn't jumped through the hoops. But it was a phenomenal piece of work, and I've still got it. To this day, I keep project work. And that did it for me. And I thought, no, I'm not going to carry on. And so, at that stage, I suggested to the department that let's get out of GCSE. And there were three other schools in the country that had moved to what's called IGCSE. Now IGCSE had no coursework at all, but it was set at a much higher level, the mathematics higher level. So what I did as I researched this, and I contacted the schools, and I asked them what was involved in IGCSE. I really ought to take this down, don't I? It's still to come. Can you see that? Is that better? Can you read that?
Better, slightly larger. Okay.
Is that better?
That's fine. You can't get it bigger than that.
Right. So I did this research about moving to IGCSE. A lot of work went into it. There were implications about the move. I even went to, not the Cockroft report, but this post-16 maths inquiry, and they complained about the data handling. And there were reasons to change, getting away from the coursework. There were reasons for being lack of confidence in the statistical project. IGCSE syllabus is strong on algebra. Sorry about that. It was a harder syllabus because there's aspects of calculus involved. There's set theory we had to deal with. Took set theory to a reasonable level, and there was functions. Functions is taught in the core 3 unit of A-level. We're actually teaching that. We are still teaching that. And then there was a strange topic. I don't know if you remember in your school days. Intersecting chords. Do you remember intersecting chords?
You want to remember in setting chords. If you draw a circle and you draw two chords, any two chords intersecting, if you take the intersection point, the product of the lengths of one chord is equal to the product of the lengths of the other. It's basically absorbed from similar triangles.
But that hadn't been taught until about 30, 40 years, you know, it's a remote aspect. But I quite like it, and we took to it. The thing is, I said I had to see the headmaster because, kind of with its problems, because as soon as you do IGCC,
you drop out of the lead, you don't drop out the lead tables. You only drop out the lead tables, you're not doing GCC. So we had one student doing intermediate tier mathematics. Which
what
you get
does
the
I stand for?
International GCC. Yeah. Sorry. So we had one student this first year doing GCSE, it was intermediate tier, for which your highest grade then available was B. And he was a nice student, but he wasn't that bright. But everybody else was going to be on this program at GCC. And we were worried about our results. You'll see what kind of results we're going to get from there. He got a B, so we were delighted. But because we'd entered GCSE, we came rock bottom of the school, the lead tables in the country, I think. And we were delighted.
The headmaster had to take that gamble, but yeah, we were really delighted to come rock bottom in the school lead tables. I'm not saying that, we were pleased. We had to sell it to the parents, obviously. But now the majority of the school is actually doing IGCSE and other subjects as well. So the science subjects have moved to IGCSE because they are unhappy about the way in which those courses have gone. And they're not, the physics courses, I believe, are just so watered down that there's no strength in them at all. Let's take a few minutes to say something about the A-level. And I'll throw our schemes to work on that. A-level is 6 units, so that's over two years, 4 of which are pure units and 2 are applied. So we do a mixture of mechanics and stats. We actually offer students a 9-unit A-level, which is 1.5 A-levels. So they come away with an award in A-level maths and what's called AS Further Mathematics. And they do 5 units of pure mathematics. Usually three mechanics units and 1 stats. This year they're doing 2 mechanics and 2 stats. Depends on how they feel. Give them a choice. And then further maths is 12 units. But at the purse, we don't go any half measures.
We teach 13 units to our double mathematicians. So they do all the pure units. They do all the mechanics units. We're one of the few schools in the country who do mechanics 4. Sadly, this sort of thing, we only go as far as S2. We used to do statistics 3, which I enjoy teaching.
I enjoy my statistics. I really enjoy teaching it. Hopefully, I'll have time to show you something at the end. So, what's in the pure content? Well, the pure mathematics runs from study of quadratic functions all the way through to the highest level, which is Dumois theorem, group theory, in FP3. Mechanics starts from effectively Newton's laws of motion all the way through to rotating bodies and force on the axis of rotation. And the stats starts with elementary statistics, which I don't mind. I don't like teaching stem and leaf or box and whisker. I can't see the purpose of that. I think they've got it wrong, very wrong, very wrong. All the way through to study of Poisson power distributions and hypothesis testing. Used to go a bit further in terms of chi-squared and so on tests, but we don't do that anymore.
Would you perhaps think that when it comes to these representational things like stem and leaf, box and whisker, that there's actually nothing there to understand, or not much?
Well, it's a GCSE topic, so why is it in the A-level schools?
I wasn't aware of that distinction.
Yeah, it's a GCSE topic. And they're so banal to me. I don't even know about. You must know about a stem and leaf.
Yeah.
They're just. They are just bar charts with numbers. That's all they are. So they do give you a distribution. But they're not any statistical use, and they're not used. Nobody uses them. You won't see them anything. So I see no point in teaching that to students, or boxing whistles, because nobody uses boxing whistles.
Well, they are used.
Are they used?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Do you see them? Do you actually see them?
Yeah.
Good. Who's using them?
All sorts of people.
Are they?
Yeah.
For what purpose?
It's a convenient course representation of the distribution of the data.
Right.
I also keep it capped here by Google. I just don't see the value of them myself anyway. Because I, when I do my analysis, I do a box and whistle plot on my 13 plus and 10 plus results. If only because I can actually bring it up for the kids to see. But that's all. Yeah. I'm surprised. I'm really surprised.
Yeah, but they are useful for comparing groups, as he said.
Right, yeah, comparing, yeah, that's what I do, I tell students, the only way is comparing the distributions across two box and whistle, yeah.
But the odd stem and leaf, you probably perhaps didn't know it, that was invented in the days of teletypes.
Oh, right, yeah.
And all you could put out on teletypes was letters and numbers.
Oh, no.
So that was one way of representing a distribution.
So why are we continuing with
it? Well, it's become part of the culture in what's called exploratory data analysis.
Right, okay.
But there are classier ways of doing the same job these days.
Well, yeah, and I don't see the value of teaching a GCSE topic, but that's just my view. But a lot of people... I brought along my handbook, and I was going to show you our schemes of work, how we organise ourselves. Okay. I have a scheme of work for every year group, including schemes of work for sixth form modules. What you're looking at is our year 9 scheme of work. But we may have two or three schemes of work in any one year group, because I differentiate with a lot of groups as well. So for the classroom teacher, there's not a hard and fast program, but there is a terminal list of topics, and there'll be headline ideas of what they should do. Sometimes there's instructions about how to go, a suggestion about how to achieve the topic. And within our schemes of work, I produce these hyperlinks, which link to worksheets, tests, good websites, and so on. So the classroom teacher has got a full program here. And you can see we've built in assessment tests that run through. Including some extension work. This is something I produced. Can you prove it? Set one only. It's probably set one and two there. This is proof. It's not really tested even I should see. So these are interesting ideas for the students to have a go at. That are way beyond what they'll see in the examination paper. This is year 9. Remember some of these. These are true and false, so that one is false. Prove that NQ minus N is always multiple of 6, which is not, I don't believe, see that one. I don't believe, have you seen this one here? If you repeat the 3-digit number, so it becomes a 6-digit number like that, do you know what happens if you divide it by 7, and 11, and 13?
About 1 times.
So what do we get? Yeah, you're right, it's 1001, yeah. So if you divide it by 7, and divide it by 11, and divide it by 13, what will you end up with?
Do all three divisions.
Yeah. You see it? Math challenges. Yeah, these numbers multiply by 1011. This is 1001, isn't it?
1001.
Yeah. Not 1011. You see it now? This is 573 times 1001. So you always get back the number you started. So this
interesting little things that...
And I suppose 1377 says 1001.
1377. Yeah. Extension to Pythagoras and areas of circles. This is proof that the arc length of the largest circle is equal to some of the arc lengths of the three smaller semicircles. You can keep on doing that arc length there is some of these.
But how are the divisions chosen then?
Well, it doesn't matter. As long as they're semicircles.
Oh yes, of course it doesn't. They're right.
Yeah. So we have a program that takes students through a whole lot. And at the end of each program we also give the students a revision list. So by the end of the year, by the time they come around to June, they'll have probably forgotten what they did in September. So they need a list of topics just to go back and revise. So I've analysed each year, so they've got a handy list, revision list, which they can tick off. So that's our year 9 scheme of work. There's extension work as well.
Sorry? How long are your lessons?
Ah, right. Our lessons are 40 minutes, more or less. I'd say one lesson in the afternoon is 35. That will change probably next year. So, just to... Year 10, these are the guys who are actually taking the exam a year early. So this is the item to see, so there's set theory. And I've built it up to the point where they're actually going into a lot more depth than me. And I've produced these worksheets, which take it at quite a high level, way beyond what they're setting in the... Unfortunately, I can't link to it now, because it's linked on our share.
Yeah.
So I can't click on those links, they won't work.
How long has that set theory been in the syllabus?
It's as you can see, so it's been there since we did 2004, so it's 8 years now. This is as you can see. I find it useful when teaching probability as well. So there's a comprehensive syllabus. This syllabus takes is 2 years' work, has to be done in 1 year. So the students have got to be strong enough to be able to cope with the pace and the material. There's no stem and leaf or boxing. Anyway, that's and then we have extension work at the end. So once we finish that post exams, we will do some other work with them, comparison work, permutation combinations, binomial expansion, some integration. And you can see the same kind of thing. And if I just show you briefly the A level, I produced this is our scheme of work, statistics 1. And there's a suggested order. At some stage there'll be some work on boxing whiskers. So this what we've done here is produce our own worksheet, there are tests, then we've got some software called the virtual textbook. I can't demonstrate that and put this on this machine, but I've got autograph as well to show you if you want to. So there's a hell of a lot for students there. So that takes them all the way through. There's details of the classroom teacher there to help them teach that topic. And particularly if I've got new teachers coming in who are not familiar, they've got something there to pick up and run with. And they don't need so much help. So, following that, the question is, I said I'd, my list of topics, I said I'd hopefully I've covered master first, examination board, schemes of learning. So I'd also like to just say something about the technology we've got in the classroom. We use various bits of software. OmniGraph, some people will know about OmniGraph. Cavalry Geometry, GeoGebra. Graphic calculators. I'm a fan of graphic calculators. We'll see that in a minute. So I've got a graphic calculator emulator, which is this, and you can see this in there. And Autograph.
So Autograph is to me the best piece of mathematical software available for schools. So what I've done is prepare, and I'll find it. I was using, I've set this up. This is 3D, and this is about teaching volumes of evolution. It comes up. Take this time. Are anyone familiar with Autograph?
No, not.
Have you ever seen this software?
No.
Right, what I've done here is... Okay, so I've drawn a curve. It would take too long. I'll take the curve, which is y plus x squared plus 2. This is a 3D picture you're looking at. You're looking at the bottom xy plane in 3D. And I've subdivided into rectangles between, I think it's between 1 and 3, I'm not sure. Okay? And what I'm going to do is select that area, and I'm going to rotate about the x-axis and ask it for the volume of revolution. So if I right-click and find the volume, let's click on that. I just want to put it on slow plot. Right-click, and then find the volume. About the x-axis, yes, okay. If I, you can see if I... So the students have actually been given the concept of volumes of revolution about the axis, and you can actually now change that by click on this. I can actually animate and take the number of divisions up. Be a better approximation to the volume. Some place it's actually giving me the volume down here, we'll be able to read that. Or I can actually animate it and put it on automatic. Change the speed of this little bit, so let's see. And then let go. I can move it around and let me see what's going on with the animation. So you've got the idea of building up a volume by plates. So this software is phenomenal, because it also allows me to, in 3D I can draw 3D lines and find out the intersections or the intersection of the line with the plane.
As you progressively make more subdivisions, thinner subdivisions, and you're getting better approximation to the volume, can you at the same time plot a graph of the current estimate of volume against number of subdivisions, or the width of subdivisions?
That would be, I don't know, you probably can, I don't know how you do that, certainly not with this software, I don't think
it's available. Because that could be quite educational to show how rapidly it tends to the limit.
We'd be able to have this facility to operate. It also allows me, what I've done with this, I do three-dimensional stuff a lot. I do statistics, a lot of statistics on this as well. So central limit theorem allows me to give an indicator of central limit theorem, so you can choose your population, and then having chosen, say, a large sample, 2,000, that's your population, it might be binomial, and then select samples of size, say, 10, and look at the distribution the sample means. Or even, what's more convincing to students is to select a geometric probability distribution and show them the distribution, and then select samples assigned 10, look at the distribution of sample means, so it is not reflective of the background population. That's quite illuminating. You can do that in no time at all.
Central limit theorem is sort of strawberries and cream for us, can you do a quick demo of that?
Can I? Okay, let me think. I'm going to go to the statistical page. I'm going to set up objects, enter your data. Now, I don't want to enter all of my data, I have to select a distribution. So let's select geometric distribution.
there. Okay. Having done that, I've got the distribution, I'm going to draw a dot plot. What's going on here, whether I've got the right scaling of this. I may have to rescale. Hang on. What the geometric distribution now? I didn't set the height, did I?
I don't think you set the mean for it.
No, I didn't. Sorry about this. Can I move away from this? I do know how to do it, yeah, but I've forgotten this portion. What I wanted to show you was this. With my classes, training classes, I have access to calculator emulator software. Have you all seen, are you aware of this? What you're about to see is my calculator on the screen. What the junior classes have got just an ordinary scientific calculator which I can demonstrate, so they can, I can show them there how what buttons to touch to do that, to access what functions they need. So one thing that I was doing the other day was with my sixth form class, which is statistics one, was looking at measure of correlation. And I said, well, oh, that's not on there, so can I shrink that down a bit? Can you see that? So that is identical to my calculator here. And have you all seen this?
No.
You've got the same one, the Texas. Yeah. Have you ever seen the emulator software for it?
No.
So this is what we've got in the maths department, so we can bring it up on the screen. So one of the things I wanted to do was produce some random data. We just check that I've got nothing in my list. And statistical lists. I've got these lists where I can put numbers. You'll see they're empty at the moment. And what I'm going to do now is put numbers into both of those lists. I'm going to choose random numbers. I'm going to choose something like 6, say. So if I go to the math menu, I can look at random integers. So I'm going to choose random integer between 1 and 10. And choose 6 of them. And I'm going to store that in list 1. You'll see them in a minute. So I've just asked you to produce 10 random numbers, 6 random numbers between 1 and 10. I'm going to ask you to do the same, but to store this in list 2. Okay. If I go to clear that now, go back to the stats list, I've got bivariate data effectively. Yeah. Random bivariate data. So I wanted to ask what would be the correlation, what do you think I could get for the current moment correlation coefficient? Or something like this. And so I said, well, first thing what we've got to do, and they would tell me, have a look at the scatter diagram. So let me map that. So I put on the stats plot, put it on. And it will draw a scatter diagram based on list 1 and list 2 with that. And if I go to zoom, I can actually use zoom and stat. We'll actually set a window for me. So there's the scatter diagram of my 6 random points. And then I can ask it for, you see that? The regression line and the correlation coefficient. Now, I've got to make sure I've got a diagnostic on at this stage. So if you go to I've got to make sure I've got a diagnostic on. Otherwise it will come up with that. So I can ask it for the regression line, which is on the stats menu, which is option 4, the rotating where to find the data, list 1, comma list 2. So it's list 2 on list 1. And I'll ask it to save that also in the Y variable. So it gives me the, they're quite surprised that you get lots of clips of a random set of data. It's quite relatively high regression value, minus 0.6. The reason being, of course, I've only got 6 data points in that thing. But then, having done that, I can also draw the regression line, because it's stored in Y, and go back to the graph, put in a regression line for me. Have you seen this? Are you aware of this? Sorry.
Aware of?
Well, are any the two ladies in front are actually teachers. So have you seen this?
A long time ago, yes.
Right. Yeah. Have you used this software?
I haven't used this
software. I find it ideal. In some ways, it's better for me than Autograph, because the kids can take this into the exam room, so they can't take Autograph in the exam.
And do the students have these calculators?
Not necessarily. it's up to them to purchase them. This calculator is about £60-70. And whilst we advise them that this is what I'm using in the classroom, then it's up to them to fork out the money. I would tell them for my classes, get this. This is going to help you. It's going to benefit you when you come down to exams. You can use it in all exams apart from one. You can use this calculator. It's permitted in GCSE class.
So once they've worked out their way around the menus, the calculator will simply do the job for them.
Yeah, but you've got to take a while to work your way around the menus. Mm. There's a hell of a lot of menus there. moving on, another...
Just one slide. Question. Do you plot the difference between L1 and L2 against L1, for example?
Well, I could do that, yeah. Yeah, I could store that in another list, yeah. So I could call L3, L2 minus L1.
And look at the, and demonstrate the actual correlation between them.
Yeah, I could do that, yeah. If you want me to do that, then I'll do that. I could also demonstrate the central limit again. And finally, the controversy coming up. So you're hopefully still awake. We always have a significant number of students going on to do mathematics each year. Maybe not that's many as going on to do medicine. We have four last year, applying for mathematics at Cambridge. One failed to get in. Another guy got into Warwick. Not those. But it's quite a high number, given that it is a top option. So what I did in the end of last year is I produced for our students preparatory material which they'll go away with at the end of the first year 6, and they'll work it over the summer because they've got to come start running when they hit us in September, otherwise they're not going to cope with the step questions and the material there. Nature of the work's being asked goes way beyond what we're teaching them in the classroom.
What does AEA stand for?
Well, that's the Advanced Extension Award. That's still running in mathematics, not in any other subject. It's only mathematics. That's quite tough. It was the special paper in mathematics. If you remember the special paper?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So it's effectively the special paper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I give the students this material, which gives them information about STEP, or even Oxford and AEA, what they need to know, what material they need to know, and some preliminary work. And I give them like 20 questions to work through over the summer holiday in sections. It's quite a nice neat question here. This is a step paper, this is step 2. So there are 3 step papers, steps 1, 2, and 3. Step 2, to my opinion, tends to be more difficult. And this is a problem I chose from step 2. So I don't think you can read that. Solve for x, that equation, 1 over x equals 1 over a plus 1 over b, where a and b are non-zero real numbers.
one candidate writes x equals a plus b as a solution, show that there are no values in a and b in which this is correct. That's not true for one of x is one of a plus one of b plus one of c. Candidate uses the same technique, writes x is a plus b plus c, show that the answer will be correct if and only if a, b and c satisfy at least one of these conditions. And that's quite a degree of sophistication beyond what they're used to. So they'll come back in September, we'll go through some of these problems. Now, having to think about them, solving those equations might not seem much, but they're at least having the techniques, these are not taught in the textbook. And I think I say to them, look, stick with it. One of the things I say about, can you read that? The importance of doing problems. Following someone else's solution is not remotely the same as doing a problem for yourself. Once you've seen somebody else's solution to a problem, you are deprived forever of most of the benefit that could have come from working out yourself. Even if ultimately you get stuck on a particular problem, you derive vastly more benefit from seeing a solution to something which you've already vastly more benefit than seeing a solution to something that's just been presented to you than having to struggle with it. And I've given hints about how you go about that. If you want that material, you give me your email address and I'll send you that. No charge. So, coming to the end of my talk, I hope people are still awake. Recruitment of staff, just say a few things on this. It's hard to find maths teachers nowadays. Some people might say it's impossible. It's hard to find good maths teachers capable of going teaching to that level. And it's difficult for some reason or other to recruit the trainers there. I don't know why, despite the reputation of the purse. So we advertised, I think it's 3 or 4 weeks ago, for 2 maths teachers. And initially it was only a triple of applicants, and I couldn't understand why. Eventually there were 16 or 17 applicants for jobs. I thought everybody in the world would want to work at the first school. We did appoint 2 teachers, but we are selective, and we didn't think that the others would have been capable or would have fitted in and would have been able to do this. So we like to think we've got people who can actually teach a broad range rather than saying, well, I don't like to teach stats, don't like stats.
Actually test the teacher's knowledge before you appoint them?
Well, we have been doing, but that's for the appointment of the head of the department. I'll say something about that in a minute, yeah. I can't understand it myself. I'm baffled. So why we can't? We can't find physicists, aren't we? Anyway. There we go. Right. August time is a busy time for me. I do a full report on our examination. So I take all the results and analyse in detail. So I analyse the modules in the sixth form, analyse the GCSE/IGC results, I analyse by module in the lower six and upper six. And then I write this report. I think it's an 11-page report. So this is last summer's exam results. We were very, very proud of our achievements. So you can see from this, we got 52% at A star. Do you know if there's an A star in the name of it? And we therefore got 88% are getting A and above. And you can see from this, we only have one student we got to see last year. Out of a year group of what's that? 64, 72, 73 is it? Yeah? Scrolling down, there's our further maths results from last year. One of these guys went on to, he's gone to Cambridge, and he's one of the best maths I've ever seen.
So we we were very disappointed there.
We were gutted. If he'd have got his A star, that would have been something. These results were more or less the same as the previous year.
This is 1.5 maths, so these guys are not quite as focused as these guys, and they're not always in it for the money. But they're still good results. And I then do analysis component by component. There's our STEP results. They may not look as STEP is a tough comparative option. We had this one chap who did the Advanced Extension Award. And he got, that's a distinction merit for unclassified. And then I do analysis of each of the units. How they've gone. These are the grades for each module. By core 1, core 2 and so on. So I do an analysis there. So you can see, this is basically first year sets. So, well these are retakes. So that's not the six, sorry, not the six. And moving on, trying to lower CPS. I said we had early entry for exams. This is our additional maths results. So I've reviewed. We have one guy at D. He's actually doing further maths this year as well. Strange guy, I don't know. But as you can see, they're pretty well unprecedented on a tough paper in year 11. You say, why do GCSE and Euro, our guys are coping with this extension work and coping well, as you can see.
Well, why don't you start on all the AS work?
Yeah, why don't we do that? Well, I suppose we would, but we already managed to teach them well enough to get all the way units in the further maths anyway. But the reason why we don't is, for one thing, I don't think quite the sophistication to cope with the AL work. I think that. And the other thing is we have a large number of students joining the first in year 12. Now, a lot of those are going to do double maths and so on. So how would we integrate those? If our students have done core 1 or core 2, what would we do? We're not big enough school to run two groups. What those who have already done part of the work and those who haven't. Some schools do, however, manage it, but I'm not in favour of that. And then I said controversy. We're very proud of that. This isn't a one-off. When we moved to IGCC, I said we were frightened that the results would go down. We were frightened that we would come bottom the league tables. Well, we did come bottom the league tables. And as far as I'm aware, we're not in the league tables anymore. We're not into GCSE. But every one of our year 10s got an A star, actually. But it's a bit more than that. Because to get an A star in mathematics, the grade boundary for an A star is about 81%. I worked out the averages for the two classes, and you can see the averages are in the 90s. So they weren't getting just A stars, did they? They found this word banal. They found actually to see too easy.
It's not charging.
And then in year 11, the guys who, for whom it's about right, you can see that we're doing very well. This is these are guys in the bottom set as well. So in the bottom set, we're getting one or two A stars in the bottom set, which we've never experienced before. So those are our results. We're very, very proud of the way in which we organise ourselves and go about that. And finally, our first. Managing maths at the first, I suppose. For me, it's a hard and difficult job. I'm retiring. It
I'm leaving the school a thriving department, a highly successful department. I'd like to think that. The student numbers are rising significantly in mathematics. Mathematics is now the biggest department of the school. So in the those doing A-level, I have 111 students currently in the first year six doing mathematics of some sort or other. I have 28 doing double maths. Next year, we could have 130 students doing mathematics out of a year group of about 160. Of those 130, there could be 35 doing double maths. And 14, these are numbers I've been given, 14 want to do 1.5 maths. The numbers that want to do mathematics, this isn't just the Perth, the number of doing mathematics nationwide is doing that, it's climbing. But we've seen numbers do that, not just that. And just to leave you with the... this was produced by MEI. I'll switch it down. This is the figures for the MEI produced a few years ago when the government were looking at changing the early syllabus and they argued against it. So you can see what's happened nationally to various subjects. Computing down 7%, physics up 5%.
And these are percentages in terms of what?
These percentage of are from the previous year.
But I mean, what quantity is being observed here?
Well, the student numbers are...
Student numbers, right.
Yeah. Okay. So, mathematics at this time has gone up 12%. Further mathematics, and there's a big demand for further mathematics now, 15% nationally. There's a lot of people wanting to do higher mathematics. If only because they've been told that you can't get an engineering degree in Cambridge unless you've got double maths. And we've seen that. The numbers are just rocketing. Which is very, very good from our point of view. We must be doing something, right? And the kids seem to enjoy the maths we do at first. I think we are challenging. We're even helping those at the lower end as well. I think I'm not just conscious of those at the top end. I'm helping those at the lower end. I think we do a good job there. Because as you can see, the results seem to bear that out. And I'd like to think they come away from the school knowing some mathematics.
Mathematics is way up on all the others.
Yeah. This was a report, dates back to 2009. So it's 2-3 years old now. But at the time, the government were looking to change over mathematics. And they were looking to change it from a 6-unit A-level to a 4-unit A-level. And in order to do that, they're going to mess things around. And everyone's saying, if you mess this around, the teachers won't cope with it. They did this in 2000, the numbers drop. If you do this, you've got to think, it isn't right, but nobody's perfectly happy with the way things are. But if you mess this around now, you'll see the student numbers going the other way. So why don't you leave it alone? And that was their argument at the time. I thought it was a good argument. But the government, I don't know, at the moment, there was supposed to have been a change into this year, 2012. The government have put all those changes on hold because they've been changing GCSE. And there's another change coming in GCSE. They're no longer happy about modular courses and stuff like that, or assessed coursework. So that's all going, isn't it? Is that right? Yeah. And so they've delayed the changes to A-level, which I now think are due in 2014. I won't be there for that, of course. But I would be frightened that if they make a move to downplay it, it'll lose content. It might lose 10 leaves. But they may lose content and just water it down further. And I'd be sad to see that our current schemes change, because they're not perfect. But I don't see them producing anything better. I'll shut up. If there any questions?
There will be.
There will be.
Thank you very much.
Are there any questions?
Can you tell us about the textbooks?
Yeah. Textbooks are...
textbooks.
Yeah, we have a, I have a suggested reader list for those who want to take mathematics further. But I have my own, I have an own library. I have a project room, and I've got library books. I've got resources for the teaching staff and the students to borrow. And I put books in our school library as well, worth, we think are worth looking at. But the textbooks, it's hard to find good textbooks in maths. Some that will challenge the students, they tend to be quite weak. So our students have progressed to high levels. So if I just choose a standard textbook, if they're still doing what's a half times 3/8, the kids, they're not going to listen to that. So we have to be very careful. I think we've got it right in year 7. I think we've got it, they're old, kind of old traditional book in year 8. It's still being produced. A very old traditional book in year 9, which is going to happen. And I don't know what we're going to do, because the best book we have is an STP book. It used to teach, it's still in there, it's work on matrices. I can't remember what else is in that, that particular text. It was matrices, it's actually matrices and transformations, finding inverse and 2x2 matrices. And that's now in further pure one, you see. And that was used to be taught in year 9, a long time ago. I remember teaching it in that book. And then we've got IGCC book, we've got books that are now dedicated to the syllabus, that is IGCC syllabus. And then at A level, for each of the units, there's a specific textbook that's produced by the examination board. So we tend to use those. Not all.
In the IGCC, does it come with sort of differentiation and integration and algorithms? Because I know that's things that used to be in the O level and they weren't in it. And I actually think it would have been helpful to me to have met them earlier, because you, if you don't meet until post 16, you've got this. I was quicker before I was 16 almost at absorbing things, yeah.
In the IGCC syllabus, there's differentiation, there's no integration.
No?
Right, yeah.
There's no logging. Well, if they're taking it a year early, then they're doing additional maths, and in additional maths, there's differentiation and integration.
Right.
Yeah. But if you're not doing it until you come to the sixth form, if you don't do additional maths, then you won't meet integration, or you won't meet logarithms, the concept of logarithms, unless it's taught by the teachers in an extension topic. Sixth formers always find logarithms and exponential forms is quite difficult to cover.
I was doing logarithms at age 13,
didn't you? Yeah, you were doing the old logarithms with the bars and the... No, that was... I looked, reflect on those, and I wondered whether at the time I really understood those, because you're doing a bar 1.7391 and then you're adding them, you're looking at anti-log tables, and there are log sines and log cosines, and nobody uses tables anymore except for table statistical random numbers. So it's all on here, you see. You don't need what, why?
So in fact you don't need to understand anything about it.
Oh, I didn't say that. Maybe not.
I should have brought my slide rule.
I've still got a slide rule, yeah.
So have I.
Then you said the setting classrooms is a big challenge.
Yeah. Because I can't get it right. Perfect.
Do you use internal exams or the term test kind of stuff? Evaluations?
Combination of the two, yeah.
To put the students. And have you found that those who are classified in high, low, and all these different classes, while you're running on a year, that classification is really not correct for some
students? Oh, yeah, yeah, it is. We will. For instance, in year 9, because we've got a large intake in year 9, I know that I can't get the setting right. I can't. I'll be honest with you. We'll say outside this room. So we then meet as a department in December. We let the kids settle in, and then we meet. They'll have had one test, one common test, but it means nothing. It's a fairly easy test just to give them confidence. So we don't judge it on that. We judge it on the professional judgment of the teachers. Have you got student here who's in the wrong class? Do we move them? So we just play around with it. And we're never far from wrong. I wouldn't like to say I don't think anyone get it right setting in maths, but I don't say they could.
When you were organising this course, the IGCSE, what extent were you, on the one hand, simply adapting what you did to the requirements of the IGCSE, or to what extent were you using that as a framework to create a learning environment around?
Right, yeah. I'm very conscious that, and at a school like ours, it's driven by exams, and what you saw there is driven by the exams a lot. But I like to think we've also put in some extension work. But the difficulty is, if for that year 10 class, they've got to do 2 years in one. The teacher's got very little opportunity to go and do an extension work. There is some. You saw that those challenging questions are put in for set one. For set two, they're probably a bit too much. That's our take on it. But I'm conscious in other year groups that if you're just doing the same banal work all the time, you don't get the flavour of what mathematics is about in terms of problem solving. So we do problem solving, and of course there's also those maths competitions, the math challenges, which the kids do enjoy, and we get some spurious results. We had some years bottom set students getting some of the highest marks, and all right, some of them maybe just been guessing, but even so, it makes you think: have we got the setting wildly wrong? Some of these students have got mathematical ability I've not seen. And the way in which we're going about it seems to label them as not failures, but not as good as that top set, and yet they have. But when we set, of course, we also set on attitude, in the sense that they've got to be able to work. And if they're not switched on, then I'm afraid, sorry, but that's it. You're not going to make top set or set two.
The students you have in your AS and A2 classes?
AS and A2, yeah. Right. Okay, so in the first year six, the classes tend to be about 14, 15. Double maths, I've got two double maths classes, one is 12, one's 14. The AS class in the lower six is currently quite small, it's 8. But the single maths classes are 14-ish. And in the second year six, we always get a few dropouts. Right? So currently in the upper six, I've actually got two double maths classes, one of 10 and one of 12. And the AS further, in fact, 1.5 people are 16 in there. And the other classes can be about 10, 11, 12.
Yeah. So how many hours a week teaching do they get?
Right, in A-level. So it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing A-level mathematics, then they'll have 14. We'd work on a fortnightly timetable. I should have said that. So it's 7 periods per week, effectively. 14 periods per cycle, and those periods are 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing double maths, you give them 24 classes, lessons a week, a fortnight.
You're in a good position to comment on grade inflation over the last 2 decades. It is even easier to have A-level today than it was 20 years ago. I wondered if one of the things you could do after the exam period is over and with an English, give them an old O-level paper or a paper from 20 years ago and see how the set does and see do they still get
them. Somebody's done that recently and it's frightened the students to death, hasn't it? They wouldn't cope with it. Mathematics has done that. There's no question about that. But the grades are, even the mathematics, when I joined the PERS, the books that we're using, the standard mathematics they were teaching, when I first arrived, they're all very old traditional books. The standard of algebra was phenomenal. And it would make A-level students wince now. That was just lower down in years 9 and 10. They were doing algebra which we would now regard as phenomenal. So, but they were getting grades that were, they were graded 1, 2 and 3 at A, all over there. So they're getting 2s and 3s, but they're doing higher mathematics. But now, our students are doing less and coming out with higher. So they're all, you can see, they're all getting A stars. That's the truth. But the other thing I should tell you is that our students are doing that, the 2-hour papers. I've complained about this. They're doing the IGCSE paper and they're finishing the 2-hour paper. Even the weaker students are finishing it in just over an hour. And there has to be something wrong there. But the exam boards won't listen to it. they're on their own sweet track. They should produce something more demanding, more challenging. The government's saying that to them, aren't they? Now you can read the papers.
Maybe there ought to be a supplementary score related to the time it took you to complete the paper.
When you fast-track somebody through the mathematics, are they also being fast-tracked through other subjects?
Yeah. We're the only subject now that does fast-tracking. We used to have French, but none of the other classes, none of the other departments do fast-tracking, just maths.
Well, then in my day, students, bright ones, were occasionally fast-tracked.
Yeah.
But that meant missing a complete year across the syllabus.
Yeah.
And being immediately thrown into O-levels.
Yeah. No, we don't do that here at first. I think it's a social element as well about it as well. If you fast-track too much, then what are you going to do with them by the time they reach the second year six? If they've done, are you going to introduce them to university maths? No, they're not all capable of doing that. We are teaching them a high level of maths as far as the maths goes, because we're teaching them 13 units of in double maths. They're getting a good mathematical education as far as we can see.
So if they wanted a double maths physics and chemistry, they're fast tracked through maths?
Well, there's no fast track in A-level, of course.
Okay.
No, there's no fast track in A-level. We actually slow it down with the additional maths syllabus in year 11. In fact, effectively, that's a holding year. But it's an introduction to A-level topics. Are you with me? So they're not getting anywhere in year 11. We could have done some A-level topics, A-level exams, but we choose not to.
I think we had probably less choice with regard to examinations. But what we did have at A-level was pure maths, applied maths, physics, chemistry. Mm. And then we had scholarship-level physics, pure maths, applied maths on top of that.
Yeah.
Which I guess is your equivalent of what?
Well, yeah, but not many people are doing STEP, so there's no such thing as scholarship anymore in that sense. Because STEP is a narrow exam. And the only people who are taking that are those who are applying here to Cambridge.
Yeah.
Or Warwick will ask for a STEP paper, usually, in mathematics. But there's no, as far as I'm aware, none of the other colleges ask for extension papers in any other subject. It's only mathematics currently. But I think, is that right? The university is looking at bringing them back. They certainly have to do extension papers in biology. So. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. I was just wondering what proportion of your students make it to top university maths departments.
What proportion? Well, I'm saying that was last year, 4 out of the year group was about 96. It's 4 out of 100, 4%. Not a large proportion. A lot of our students now want to do medicine. Where maths is seen as a service subject for physics and so on.
Yes. And what's the proportion that would land up sort of studying mathematics at university?
Well, as I say, it's but from the year group we've got this year. There's 3 or 4. Not just doing STEP.
Well, one I'm making it to the top university department.
Yeah, they're taking it here to Cambridge. Yeah, but yeah. There may be one or two others who going elsewhere. Yeah. Not many people. Sadly, not many people are opting to do mathematics. It's one thing that I regret. But we have tried to take that on board. What we've done just recently is we've made an effort as a department to promote mathematics. We've actually brought in a student, not from Cambridge, but a student who left the school 5 or 6 years ago, and he's at Birmingham University. He did A-level mathematics, and he taught himself further maths after he left the school. And he then ended up at Birmingham University reading mathematics. So we got him to come back and talk to the students about mathematics being a useful subject to do, what the career opportunities there are. You don't have to go here. You can still qualify. There are good universities, Leeds, Sheffield, they should consider Warwick, obviously, yeah, for mathematics. But it seems that the flavour of the month is medicine and engineering, and I can't do much about that.
I was just going to say, how close is what you're doing to national curriculum? States, they actually be much more limited in what they could teach. suppose you're probably even cross-checking it towards.
Well, I do, because I do keep in touch with what's going on. I'm aware of the difference between the IGCSE and the GCSE.
Yeah.
I do know that there are some aspects of GCSE which I'd like to teach, but they're not far enough. There's work on transformation of graphs in GCSE, which is an A-level topic. There's work on modelling, which I quite like. So that would ditch. But all the rest is... We enjoy the high work. Not necessarily high work, is it? It's just differentiation, some set theory. We've built that up as well in terms of the worksheets I've produced. So it goes at a much higher level than what they're going to be testing in the IGCSE. And functions. Functions, I take the functions at IGCSE as far as core 3. That's it's actually not taught in core 1, where it should be. The A-level syllabus is back to front. So they actually taught functions in the third unit in A-level. But there we are, and we do that at IGCSE. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I think so. But we still have aggregates, I think. But we do the best we can. Yeah. It's a good school to teach, and I'd be sorry to leave it. But it's a hard job. Yeah, it's a hard job.
This notion of international GCSE is a bit new to me. Who organises it and what's its relationship, say, to the International Baccalaureate?
I'm not sure what its relationship... IB is, of course, A-level. I'm not sure how it fits in with that, but I think it was intended originally so that mainly for overseas students. Uh-huh. Our overseas students do it still, apparently, just still do O-level as well. I don't know. That's still going. And that's why the papers at IGCSE are... both calculator papers, but I think it's because they can't secure them or they can't have the same regulations overseas, so they say they can use a calculator. Whereas at GCSE, there's a calculator and a non-calculator. I'm happy if you don't use those calculators on one paper. But
the exams and the syllabus are basically determined, therefore, in this country.
Yes, it's run by OCR mm-hmm. or EdXL. We do EdXL, but they're not far removed from each other. Yeah. So that was designed here. I don't know how long the IGCSE syllabus has been going, but the first schools that picked up on it were around about 2003. We were the fourth school in.
So it may not therefore have any necessary relationship at all to the International Baccalaureate.
No, that's right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there's a relationship actually there at all, but I don't know. Yeah, well, we appointed yesterday a lady who'd done, we can't find maths teacher. If they've done maths degree, they're not going to come teach, basically.
So
they've studied maths as part of their degree?
Well, no, the lady we appointed just, one lady has got a maths degree, the other lady we appointed, she's got a PhD in surface physics. So a maths will be pretty good, but it's not maths specialist, if you know what I mean. From my point of view, that's kind of sad. But there we are.
I think it's possible somebody can do something very highbrow in a particular area, which may be related to maths, but then struggle in the teacher. I mean, there's this lovely personal communication as well. But
oh yeah, we're well aware of that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's that. Lady physicist provokes an interesting thought because, as you say, presumably her maths is up to it.
Oh, yeah.
But she also knows quite a lot about something big where the mathematics is an essential part of the study, and she could use that
in a
teaching context as illustrations where the maths can lead to, all that sort of thing. It's not just an abstract procedure, it is something which.
Oh, she'll bring a lot to the classroom. But within my department, the 13 of us, I've got, a couple of years ago, we appointed two new guys. One has a maths degree here at Cambridge. The other one is a Cambridge graduate, but in engineering. Natsky. Who else? I've got another chap who's retiring this year. his degree is in engineering. He's been teaching maths all his life. He's a good maths teacher. I've also got another teacher who was the director of ICT in the school. So his is not a maths degree either. But it's a mixture. I've got some with maths degrees, others with engineering degrees. And that's... It is very difficult. People with maths degrees usually go off and do something else. Or if you're going to appoint someone with a maths degree, you've got to make sure they can teach in the classroom as well.
Used to be a PGCE.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they still do PGCEs?
Yeah. So we'd always encourage someone to have a teaching qualification rather than just walk into the classroom. Yeah. Is that okay?
That's absolutely fine. At which point, thank you very much.
Right. Come round the person and wander around is what my advice.
If anyone would like to pay their subscriptions, then you'd like to find them, please.